Welcome all, welcome all. We have the independent movie riffing and parody troupe, Sinister Theater. We got Sean Collins. Welcome.
Thank you.
We got Brooks Cox.
I'm here. I'm Brooks.
Hey, I couldn't tell. And got Keith Wilson.
Hello there.
Hello. They have done it all since 2008. They made their material available on their website, as well as big time riffers themselves, Riff Tracks website. They've done everything from Nightmare on Elm Street, both RoboCops, Planet of the Dinosaurs, the Back to the Future trilogy, Batman Returns, Pretty Woman, Tim Burton's Planet of the Apes, Willow, Forrest Gump, and Child's Play. We'll just circle around. You were in a lot of the same comedy troupes, and you're currently part of the other Phoenix, Arizona sketch comedy group, Bully Mammoth. What got you guys into this interesting side hustle? Sean, I'll let you go first.
So we all kind of go way back. Brooks and I met when we were like really young, like 5-6 years old.
Oh, really?
And then we met Keith in high school, and all three of us really liked Mystery Science Theater 3000. We were all kind of involved mm-hmm. with theater. We liked comedy.
It's the go-to. It's the universal fruit that gives.
Exactly. And one of the things we would do, and we would like hang out, we would watch movies and make fun of them, as I'm sure lots of people do. And then we were involved in theater and things through high school. After high school, we didn't do much performing as a group, but then we were listening to rifftracks.com riffs, which was like the heir to Mystery Science Theater 2000. Had all of the
users can submit riffs, and I think they stopped it, I want to say probably around 2012, kind of.
That sounds right. Yeah, like at first it was just you would buy riffs there, but then they
it was around for a while, but I was in the middle of it. I was a class of 2015, so by the time I was graduating from college, I was seeing them change up a lot of the landscape and do more live events and less mm-hmm. user-supported stuff. But fun fact, I still see people share you guys' riffs in various forums and everything. Like they do the work for everybody. Like they sync it out with the movie.
That's awesome. I'm glad that they're still making people happy.
Yeah, you got to share the tapes.
Right,
yeah, exactly.
Circulate that shit. Mm-hmm. Okay, keep going. I'm just being a dumbass.
No worries. But how we got into Riff Tracks started doing their iRiffs section, where like fans could submit their own commentary tracks, and so Keith approached me and asked if I would be interested in doing a couple of those. The first one we did was The NeverEnding Story. The second one we did was like. Harley Brown Christmas, I think. And then
you were the Christmas guys for a while.
Yeah.
Like, remember when that movie was so annoying each Christmas? Let's talk about it.
And then the third one we did was Back to the Future, which was the one that like got us like popular, I guess. And then during that time, there was a whole lot of riffing groups. And then there were some that kind of stuck around and continued to put out releases. And so we kind of became one of that group. With other groups like Horrific Productions and Ronan Fox and Quip Tracks.
Mm-hmm.
From there, I mean, obviously we just started making the riffs, and then, but like as kind of an add-on to that, doing iRiffs gradually got Keith and I into doing stand-up comedy, which got me introduced to the people in the Bully Mammoth sketch comedy troupe. So I joined that comedy group, and then Keith actually eventually joined that group as well. And then Brooks actually wrote one of the sketches for that comedy troupe at one point. And then Bully Mammoth is no longer active. We had our last show, I want to say probably like 7 years ago now. Some of the people like got married and moved away. But mm-hmm. after Bully Mammoth, I got involved with a puppet theater production called All Puppet Players. And so that's what I've been doing for probably the last like 6-7 years.
Nice. Oh, man. Fearlessness is what I'm detecting here. All right. So, Brooks, what got you out of your comfort zone and out of your shell and made you say, I can do open mic night and I can be part of a movie riffing troupe?
I didn't do any of the stand-up comedy, actually. Sean and Keith were doing the riffs, and I just kind of bullied my way into that. I said, you know, I like what you guys are doing. I want to be a part of it, so let me
in. Sweet.
Let me in. Yeah. Nope. So, they'd done probably 12 of them already by the time I joined.
Sounds about
and
right.
Then we did another, I want to say 8 or 10.
Yeah, we kind of had, for our riffing stuff, we had like the early years when it was just Keith and I, and I've gone back in like, because this is all now a long time ago. You're saying 2008, which like, that sounds right, but that's so long ago now. Mm-hmm. And I've gone back to listen to some of our earlier ones, and the sound quality is terrible. The sync
lines, thought only DVD and Blu-ray was going to be a thing, and now here we are, streaming wars.
It was definitely rough, and it's like hard to listen to some of the earlier ones. Obviously, a lot of like comedy sensibilities have changed. So while I would say none of the jokes that we ever did were like anything that was like truly horribly offensive, there were jokes that like I don't know if we would do that joke now. Things were different in 2008,
different time.
Things like that. So a lot, like for me, a lot of the earlier riffs, it's kind of like I'm sort of like memory holding a little bit, you know, like we had like our revival. We took Keith and I took a break for, I want to say like 3-4 years. We didn't put out any. And then we had our revival where Keith and I did one. And then we had Brooks join us after that. And that was like, that's our most recent crop of riffs. It started with like the Karate Kid and like Ninja Turtles 2, Pretty Woman. I think Child's Play is in there, Frozen, the RoboCop remake.
Yep.
And those riffs, I think Forrest Gump is part of that too. Those riffs I stand by a little bit more because they're much more recent. And then also like from a technical standpoint, I feel like they're a lot better. The sound quality is a lot more improved, and the sync lines actually sync up with the movie, which was a big problem we had with our first couple of releases. So.
I did see that in some forums where people were like, we still are having issues syncing up the motion picture of Star Trek.
It was a rough time. We did not know what we were doing. And we honestly still mostly don't, but we've just gotten, I think technology has gotten better, and we've kind of upgraded some of our equipment, but a lot of it was just like, we were figuring out how to record and how to edit and all that stuff as we went along.
It's wild how you guys also did kind of the Sinky, the Sync Goblin, much like, what's his name on Riff Tracks?
The Disembodio.
Yeah, Disembodio, the robotic toaster.
That was definitely, there was a lot of, I think, that going around in the riffing groups where, you know, because you need the sync lines back then, like the way that it worked, you just needed to occasionally make sure that the Riff Tracks recording was in sync with the movie. And so it necessitated sync lines. And then so everyone kind of just decided like, well, if I'm going to have a weird voice in there, I'll just make it a different character.
Right. You guys thought of, you've said it before, you kind of gone, life's kind of got in the way and everything. You've thought of doing any other kind of side hustles or writing for various YouTube shows or getting involved from afar on anything?
We've done like here and there. I know Keith, within the last couple of years, he put out a riff short on our YouTube channel, which is still up, by the way. It's up. It's Poobah 103, P-O-O-B-A-H 103, if people want to visit it. A lot of our riffing content has been like demonetized or threats of like copyright strike, because that was another thing that was back in the early days of doing this, people ran into all the time. So to be safe and protect like the YouTube channel, a lot of it I've either like made private or just taken down. But there's still some of our riffing content up there.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't know. Yeah, we definitely haven't like officially retired, but it's, you know, it takes time. It's a time consuming process to make them. And, you know, we got older, you know, Keith and Brooks.
I'm seeing people are doing that now on Twitch where they do live riffs, but it's still more restrictive because unless you have the link, you're not going to see the live show or playback.
I feel like that's also, I mean, depending on what they're riffing, if they're like riffing a movie, I feel like that might be dubious legal territory.
Yeah,
like,
I don't know how they get away with it. I guess because no one can track it or it's not readily available.
But also, I mean, I don't think they'll get like sued or anything. I can't imagine that these companies are going to go after them for hundreds of thousands of dollars. But anyway, I don't know. I feel like I was talking a whole lot there. So Keith,
yeah,
you got anything to, what's your take on our origins? And maybe you could talk a little bit about like the process, how we went about making the riffs.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, kind of, or I felt like that was as far as our comedic stuff, like yeah. We did do stand up and we did do stuff in theater. I felt like the riffing was like our like wheelhouse, like we really, really could do our best like comedic things in that arena. But as far as what we would do is we would try to do kind of what like Mystery Science Theater did, was just go through the movie just once. And then we started doing it more than once, but that got more time consuming. Like we would watch the movie, you know, write things down and then go back and record. But then that was really time consuming. So we decided in order to release more, we would just, you know, watch the movie, you know, write down a few things, you know, pick the best riff and then record on the spot. So that was really kind of our setup and the way we do things. And I think like, as far as picking the movies goes, I found like the best riffs, or at least I find the best riffs are the movies that are like really like well-made or like award-winning. They're just, for me, they're easier to do when like the actors put in the effort.
It's perfect. So now you're just looking for the imperfections that, you know, every movie has it. There's no getting around it. People think, oh, it's good or bad or divisive in between. It's like, no, it's you can find it even if you don't want to.
Yeah, I think it's like a point. It's easier sometimes to riff better made movies because, like, riffing, at least for us, it's not necessarily about like pointing out plot holes with it or like technical mistakes within the movie.
Yeah, itself. You're not CinemaSins. You're just
We tend to like just exaggerate characters and situations. So like I know, like a lot of our riffs like will like talk like make one like as if it's one of the characters speaking something and they say something like really wild or like. The best example I can think of this is like the version of Doc Brown that we like create over the course of our three Back to the Future riffs.
Yes.
An unhinged lunatic. That's sort of, what our style was a lot of the time. Sorry, Keith. I apologize. I cut you off.
No, you're fine. But yeah, they were much easier to watch the better movies. Like, cause we did pick movies we liked, you know, we didn't like anything against these movies. But it felt like, well, how dare these actors, you know, act so well? I'll show them their imperfections. So that was part of how making it funny was too.
Say I don't have anything against Willow, actually.
Well, it's fine. Yeah. It's another movie. I'm seeing a lot of people seem to, I don't know what it is. It's like when we get older, I'm seeing it now with just other beloved blockbusters. I'm seeing people talk trash now about Seven or Speed. I'm like, seriously, you can only hate so many movies. But I get it. Some people just get jaded, or it's just a bad day, or maybe you saw a cheesy TV edit and that can really fuck up what you think about a movie, you know.
Yeah, no, I mean, I like, you know, I like Forrest Gump. I like, you know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. They're, you know, I don't have anything against those movies. Just for some reason, it just really brings out really good riffs for me, at least.
Totally. And I
really like the process of going back to what Keith was saying about how we'd go through a few lines and then pick the best one and record it. And just that whole process, that was just us sitting around goofing and it. Just a lot of fun. So a lot of there's a lot of riffs that no one ever hears because they're the second or third best one and they didn't make it, but they had us cracking up still. So it was good. Just good times making them.
Oh, totally. You got to be prepared for something to go on the cutting room floor, unfortunately. altogether, how would you guys describe your style, like on how you conceive a riff? And obviously you already do a raw watch through just to refresh again. Do you kind of just get imaginary run times or scene descriptions in your head saying by this scene, I need to contribute more to this scene versus that one, where that one can kind of just speak for itself. It's so cheesy or goofy.
We really just try to go for not having a lot of silence, you know? So anytime that there's no dialogue in the movie, you try to go a little denser with the riffs there. And, you know, you try not to talk over the movie itself.
That's
too
so
much.
Hard too. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that can be difficult. Definitely.
Especially if it's boring.
It's like, it's a balancing act. Where, I mean, the assumption is anyone who's going to like download a movie riff, like pay money to listen to people they've never met, like talk over a movie, it's probably a movie they've already seen. But there's also always that balance. Like, we want to make sure people can follow the plot of the movie well enough that the jokes we're making about the movie will still make sense.
Yeah. There's something so, to tie it all together, saying this guy is giving exposition and now we're going to talk about their goofy friend or.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
third act.
just like, yeah, there's, you know, there's action scenes in movies. Like, those ones are, on the one hand, very challenging sometimes to write jokes for, because
it's
not a very well done action scene. those are the parts that need the most jokes, because like, you can follow the action, but it also frees us up to like talk as much as we want, because you can still watch what's happening and listen.
By the third explosion, we got to say something here.
Dialogue is maybe this is just for me, but I feel like dialogue scenes are easier to write jokes for, because you can kind of like take the last thing a character just said and make a joke out of it. But also, those are the scenes where
you just
pull back so people can listen to the scene unfold.
I used to interact with the Riffer brothers, and they would do literally just perfect on the spot improv riffs. I couldn't believe it.
Being able to do like a live riff without a script or anything like that, that's like it feels like it's a roll of the dice every time you go into it. Because it's, on the one hand, you come up with sometimes like jokes that are really, really funny, that are probably born from the fact that you're like just coming up with it totally off the cuff. But also there's times where it's like, I can't think of anything and I haven't spoken in like 3 minutes, which feels like a really long time when you're on stage. So.
Yeah, I don't think we would ever try doing that. But I found like the hardest thing, because we did two musicals, like Nightmare Before Christmas and Frozen. And during the songs, you know, they're not stopping. Like during a song, you're always singing. There's no pausing, no breath for any riffs.
So
those were tough to do. So you kind of had to talk over them singing. So otherwise, you'd have, you know, 5 minutes straight of silence. So that was difficult.
Yeah, that was definitely challenging. but like I said, like in terms of our style, especially as we got better at doing it and we started putting them out with a little bit more frequency, we stepped away from like watching the movie multiple times. And like Keith said earlier, at the beginning, we had a notebook and we would write down the time code and write down the joke we wanted. And so we would watch the movie a bunch of times and add in as many jokes as we could find, but it took forever. And then we would go through and literally like,
I love that formula though. I think that's good.
Each joke one at a time. But then what we eventually went to is we would watch the movie once all the way through, and then we would just start riffing it. We would literally watch the movie together and think of jokes like all sitting around together. And when we came up with the best joke, we would just record it right there on the spot. So we were like riffing the movie as we watched it, which
as many takes as it takes, baby.
it made it take a lot less time. We were able to get through them a lot faster once we stepped away from writing all the jokes down on paper. Although I would be interested, I don't know, Keith, do you happen to still have any of those notebooks that like write all our jokes in?
God, maybe in a storage unit somewhere. I have no idea. Yeah.
I've been thinking of doing riffing for a while, and I thought of kind of the same thing, where just have some, if you know the movie enough, bring some jokes to the table, and then, you know, do a few more recording sessions, and, you know, the best takes remain, and the ones that just aren't as funny as envisioned, just toss them. I was seeing some early day riffers make the mistake of, in fact, I see some podcasts do this where they're literally just talking over the movie. But you say, it's 50-50, because sometimes, again, like the audio is too loud over the main movie audio. So
I think, so that point, like, it, to my mind, there's a definite difference between like riffing a movie and just doing a commentary track for a movie. Like a riff is literally a commentary track, but like it's, the intent is very different. Like, I'm sure you're familiar with like Red Letter Media.
Yes.
Like that. And they record a lot of commentary tracks for films, and they're often very funny and entertaining to listen to. But that it tends to, oftentimes they'll just sit there and it's like, you're just listening to them have a conversation about a scene in a movie as it's happening. And that can be super funny. It's just that like, but it's not a riff. They're not like they're not doing what Mystery Science Theater 3000 was doing. And so that's not to say that it's better or worse, but it's just like, they're two different things.
Oh, it's even funnier when half the time the commentary kind of becomes a riff. I would see, if you listen to even like a commentary track on a TV show like 24 or a movie franchise like Lord of the Rings, half the time the actors are practically riffing.
I feel like especially in the early days of iRiffs, there were, I think there was a lot of groups that it was like, they couldn't quite decide like what it was they were doing. Like,
what are we?
Commentary track for a movie, or are you going to do like a movie riff? And I don't know, it's not that it really matters. At the end of the day, they can make whatever they want. If people want to listen to it, then God bless. You know, just like, we wanted to do more of like, yeah, we're going to crack jokes about the movie. It's not us like having a freeform conversation as the movie takes place. It is literally like, imagine us in a theater, we're three little silhouettes in the corner, and we're going to like make monkey shines at the film as it plays on, you know?
Oh, that would be an interesting one to do. Monkey Shines with George Romero. A divisive movie in his resume. Cool creature effects, iffy philosophy and storyline.
You guys want to, Keith and Brooks, like, you guys want to maybe like, do you have favorite jokes that you remember, like any jokes from any of our riffs? They'll like, we'll just be saying jokes now out of context, which I'm sure will be super entertaining for the listeners here. But anyone who might be familiar with our content, this might be a little fun trip down memory lane.
Everybody do the shredder.
Everybody,
you guys were very good with those riffs where you were noting just the music and dancing. Kudos to Frozen, because again, you guys are good at not trying to divide anybody. You know, there's always going to be someone like, I love that movie, I don't want to hear it riffed. I'm like, well, some of us have heard it 20 times and we want to kind of have a funny interaction this go around. But yeah, I mean, there's something for everybody here.
Yeah, it's hard to, I don't know. It's really, I really enjoyed, I don't know. There were a lot of the March of the Penguin stuff we did with Morgan Freeman.
Morgan Freeman.
Where that were good.
My voice.
Can't remember any.
Imagine offhand. If you did Farce of the Penguins.
That would be fun.
Which is already a comedy spoof.
I feel like, because there's this sort of idea. I mean, I think, and again, I may be overemphasizing this because we're super biased because we experience it only from our end. But like when we put out the first Back to the Future riff, there were a lot of, I remember we got a lot of like comments on the forums and everything, people saying like, they riffed a comedy movie. Like, you can't riff comedy movies, but then they put out this riff and it's really funny. I guess you can riff comedy movies. And like, on the one hand, I don't know that I would call Back to the Future like a straight comedy. It's definitely a very funny movie,
but it's not
more like
comedy.
An adventure.
It's an action sci-fi film.
Yeah. But also I think we did sort of like show that like you can riff basically anything. Like, it's just sort of about how you approach it. And in cases where if the movie you're riffing is already funny, you know, I feel like you don't try to make like outdo the jokes the movie is telling. You just put in your own jokes where you can find them to supplement how funny the movie itself already is. Which I think, I mean, especially with our Back to the Future ones, which were, I think, our best selling ones the whole time we were doing it.
Sweet.
I feel like we managed to do that.
Someone looked at the numbers.
That, remember back in the day on old school riff tracks, like you could bring up this whole page and tell you like how many dollars all the riffs you'd put out and made. And Back to the Future one was, I think, definitely our highest seller, but then two and three were also pretty up there. They outsold a lot of our other ones. I think that was the riffs that like introduced a lot of people to us. And then they either checked out the rest of our stuff or were like, no, these guys are not for us.
Yeah, I remember when we I don't know if you remember this, Sean, but when we released Planet of the Dinosaurs at the same time, coincidentally, that Riff Tracks.
Oh, yeah.
Mike and them released their Planet of the Dinosaurs like the exact same time. Just a really weird coincidence. I think I don't know who felt bad about it, but they did put us on like the main page for, I think, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that was funny. I thought ours was better, to be honest, our Planet of the Dinosaurs, but
I couldn't get into that one, and I'm a big Riff Tracks guy, but they've done plenty of other awesome, when they come out with a 70s grindhouse or 80s drive-in theater type movie, that they're often on the money. It is almost like old MST3K, especially if you see the Italian horror film Ghost House, or some of those other ones. It's like, okay, cool, I would have totally been down to see that had that been a MST3K, Elvira, or Svengoolie type movie.
the Riff Tracks thing, like, those guys are also, they're still great. Like, and no disrespect to, like,
yeah, the we're current not talking
iteration
to anyone.
Of Mystery Science Theater 3000, like the Netflix revival and everything. If I'm being honest, I haven't really watched most of that. I've watched, I think, the first two episodes of, like, the revival that came out on MST3K with like Felicia Day and Patton Oswalt.
Yeah.
And I can't speak to it. I haven't watched a lot of it, but for me, like, my favorite riffers are definitely Mike, Kevin Murphy, and I really like Bill Corbett, the second crow. I still, obviously, Joel Trace, I can't pronounce his last name, Trace Bullo or whatever.
Trace Bullo, Frank Conniff. Yeah.
He, like, they're also great riffers.
Have you heard any of the Mads Are Back?
Like, all those, I haven't, they have their own show now, the Mads Are Back?
Yeah, they got their own show.
I think I've heard something about that, but I didn't.
Well, it's awesome because they're actually in the theater with you. So they're actually interacting with the audience.
Are they in character as, like, Dr. Forrester? And
no, they're just being themselves, and it was just so funny. We were watching a cheesy, they kind of, for a while, had two sets of movies. They had Glenn and Glinda by Ed Wood, and they had one other movie. And then the one I kept seeing was The Tingler by Vincent Price, William Castle.
Yeah.
And they were very interactive with the audience. At one point, I think it was 2017, so they were riffing a few infamous movies that had come out then, saying, this movie's going to flop harder than Baywatch. And they got a bunch of O's, and they made a Valerian riff, and I was like, ouch. And they're like, oh, did I hurt your Valerian feelings?
Moviegoers. Yeah, the 10 people in the audience who saw Valerian.
Oh, it was packed, dude. Like, every seat. But yeah. But yeah. But they're doing it now, you know, online, and you can either see the live riff, but if you purchase a ticket and you can't see it, you still get to keep a download of the event after the fact. But yeah, they're all doing their own thing. I know the Netflix revival was iffy for MST3K. I recommend the Gizmoplex, especially now that you get every single episode that's commercially licensed.
Mm. I love that you can watch. I mean, like, there are so many. I'm sure the people who own the rights to them are not happy about this, but, like, you can watch so many episodes of Mystery Science Theater 3000, like, in their entirety on YouTube, which is great. For a lot of people who, they, like, watch The Office, like, time after time after time, or they watch Parks and Recreation. Like, my comfort viewing, if I want to put something on and not have to pay 100% attention to it, but, like, check in with it and, like, laugh at all the parts that I know I like, I put on old episodes of Mystery Science Theater 3000. So there are episodes of that show that I have probably sort of watched, you know, at least 10 times.
Now you know it by heart.
Yeah. So, like, I know if there's, like, a joke coming that I really like, I'll, like, you know, I'll be doing chores around the house, but have it on really loud in the living room, and then, like, walk in to experience the joke that's coming up that I know I like. And then
totally. Great stuff. So let's talk a little about your riffing trope. Bully Mammoth, how's that schedule going post-COVID?
So Bully Mammoth is no longer active. No longer. Our last show I don't know exactly when it was, but I want to say it was like 2017, something like that, 2018 maybe.
All right.
While that was happening, like, I mean, that was obviously, we were doing live sketch comedy performances in the Phoenix, like Tempe area of Arizona. Some of our sketches, like if you go to the YouTube and look for Bully Mammoth, you'll probably find some of our sketches. There's also like a very famous, I think, rapper who uses the name Bully Mammoth, so you'll probably get his stuff too. But if you type Bully Mammoth sketch comedy, we should come up. Some of them.
What about that Christmas movie you guys made? Is that still available?
That is, yeah. You can actually. So Bully Mammoth put out a Christmas movie.
What?
it's called Hashtag Santa Scandal. It's a like I don't want, if you want to watch it, you can. It's on YouTube for sure. Search for Hashtag Santa Scandal. I'm in it.
You get a Mooma sighting in the background.
Oh yeah, a friend of ours named Adam Mooma is in it. He's a friend of ours. He's never done any of the riffs with us, but he was my roommate at one point, and we were talking about how we should make him a character in our Sinister Theater riffs. But he's in that movie, and you can watch it. It's still on YouTube. It's pretty fun. It's like 40 minutes long. And that was kind of like our swan song as a theater group. And then some of them, you know, moved away or got married and got busy with other things.
Hey, congrats. That's more than we'll do in this lifetime. It's great.
But then after, I mean, and by the time I was in Bully Mammoth, we were mostly done doing riffs. I think, what was the last riff we did? It was Planet of the Apes, right? Brooks and Keith. And then you did so. Keith, I know you did one like Rocky Raccoon Saves the Day, which is on our YouTube channel.
Yeah, I did a Rocky Raccoon Saves the Short, and I did I took some cut scenes from Resident Evil 4 because it was free. So I took some off of there and riffed some scenes from that, and but yeah, nothing else since then.
But then after Bully Mammoth wrapped up, I was looking for another theater company to sort of get involved with, because I got I was really back into doing live theater now at this point. And so I joined a theater company called All Puppet Players. Their website is allpuppetplayers.com. We're pretty well known in the Phoenix area. We do like puppet show versions of like famous movies. So like we did in October, we did Pup It, which is like the 1980s or 1990s like miniseries It, but we did it with puppets. And that was a pretty big success. Right now we're currently running this is the sixth year we've done it. We're doing Die Hard, A Christmas Story, which is it mixes the plot of Die Hard with the plot of A Christmas Carol. So it's John McClane, you know, trying to save everyone inside the Nakatomi Plaza, he keeps getting visited by Christmas ghosts who take him to like the past, present, and future. That one is always, this is the sixth year we've done that one, and that one is always a huge success. And then other ones that we've done, we did this previous summer, we did Alien. We've done like Never Ending Story. They did a show called A Fistful of Puppets, but it was basically the movie The Quick and the Dead, but you know, as a puppet show. They've done Jaws, they've done Jurassic Park, we did recently. We've done, we have a Friday the 13th the musical. So it's a Friday the 13th puppet show, but like it also as if it were like all the songs are parodies of like famous or well-known songs from Broadway musicals. And then Jason is alive, like a human person in that show, so he's a guy in a full Jason costume. And he goes around and like kills all the puppets in like classic ways.
Oh, lovely.
You get really creative with the different kills and how he dispatches each of the puppets. so I would, definitely, if anyone lives in or around the Phoenix area or ever comes here to visit, check us out. The website's allpuppetplayers.com. We have some videos on YouTube as well if you want to check those out. In addition to that, the other thing that I sometimes do is, I've written a couple of movie reviews for a friend of mine who has a movie review blog called Margetis Movie Reviews. Margetis, Margetis, if anyone wants to look it up.
Yeah, if you want to send me the link, I can put it in the show notes. Please let me know.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But so you can go there, like look up like Mark Geddes Movie Reviews, Sean Collins, and you'll see the ones that I've written. I mean, also check out his whole website because it's he's got a lot of really great reviews. but those are the projects that I've been doing since then. And then Brooks and Keith, I don't know if you have anything you guys want to mention.
Yeah, I mean, I also like to mention, I mean, you guys, yeah, as far as All Puppet Players goes, I mean, it's very, very popular. I mean, you guys sell out probably almost every show. And you guys did get a mention on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert one time. I remember that.
Indirectly. He had a guest, Audie Cornish, I think. I don't know 100% how to pronounce her first name. She has her own very popular podcast where it's kind of, I think, similar to your podcast, where she just like interviews people who are in various like aspects of the entertainment industry or like other prominent industries. And she had a spot where she was talking to Stephen Colbert, and she mentioned how she had like gotten information about like she's just listing off like potential topics she's exploring. And she's like, yeah. And I'm like, I've heard about this one group in Arizona that does like puppet versions of movies. And that was our group that she was talking about. And so after that happened, we tried to get all our fans to like message the Colbert Show and Audie Cornish to like, hey, that's us, you should interview us. So she wound up having our director, or Sean, his name's also Sean, but the guy who owns the company, he actually interviewed with her on her podcast. So that was pretty cool. I remember when that happened, it was like, oh snap, Stephen Colbert is talking about us. They never say our name, they're never like, you know,
I mean, he did say like, you know, I don't know if he's, he did say like, I would like him on the show, that'd be cool.
Yeah, I feel like that's the sort of, that he just sort of like said that in the moment, because we
definitely, right, yeah,
we messaged, we had all our fans like tweeted him and send emails, and they never got back to us, so I don't think we'll show up on the Colbert Show anytime soon. but it was a nice little brush with internet, with national attention.
Sweet.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not doing much. I think the last like live thing I did was the wrestling thing, but that was, they may have been like a couple years ago.
Did we? I think we might have hit that video. We had on Keith. Yeah, was in a wrestling promotion for a while. So he did, you know, like WWE style, like wrestling matches. I did a lot of hardcore matches from what I remember. And right. we had one of them on our YouTube channel. I don't know, it might be hidden now, but I guess if you want, I can make it live again if you want people to.
I mean, if you search my wrestling.
People need Tony Trouser. Come on now. Don't hide that.
Right. Yeah. If you search Tony Trouser, you can find pretty much, you know, most of the matches that were done by the indie promotion, IZW. So, yeah, that was fun. And I don't know if I probably wouldn't do it again, because just I'm much older now.
Yeah, you're a lot older these days.
And the physicality of it. Yeah.
Seriously, guys, look up some of those matches. Keith took, I remember one match he did. It was a hardcore match, and I had a kendo stick that I had bought.
What kind of match? No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
and so Keith asked if he could borrow this like kendo stick that I had in my closet that was not, I had no professional, like no use for whatsoever. I had bought it at a gun show on like a whim. So I was like, sure, take it. And it got broken over his back during the match. And then though, there's this great moment later where Keith's opponent breaks this kendo stick over his back during the match, and the kendo stick splinters into all these little pieces. And then at one point, Keith has picked up this like tiny piece of the kendo stick and keeps it like the size of a ruler and keeps whapping his opponent in the face with it.
Oh my word.
It's this amazing spot during the match. It's very, very good. It's very funny. So
you gotta start riffing more live wrestling now.
Oh, yeah, I remember during that match, I did try to show some color, like make myself bleed. Mm. And I did have a razor blade like hidden in my tape in my wrists, and I really, really tried to to stab myself in the head as much as I could, but nothing was coming out. So, and I didn't want to stay down there for like two or three more minutes longer than I had to. Mm. So yeah, it's much harder to stab yourself than you would think.
That's I feel like I would have guessed that was true. I'm glad that you could confirm it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
So we've got stabbing ourselves in the head, a comedian randomly buying a kendo stick at a gun show. So I think you can tell we're from Arizona, right?
I mean, it's the Wild West, baby. I mean, anything is possible.
Yep.
Well, so this has been very neat. Well, why do you think you guys were just so comfortable with each other that made you say, you know, let's do this? Leroy Jenkins here, let's do this.
I think it really just does come down to, it was a thing that we had like literally just been doing, just like as three friends. Like we would sit alone, like long before Riff Tracks, long before any of us were into like stand-up comedy or anything like that. When we first all met, like way back in high school, you know, we'd hang out and we would sometimes watch movies, and we would sit there and make fun of the movies MST3K style because we all liked that show. And then there were a couple of instances where we literally would like go see movies like real late at night where they'd be almost
you can say what you want.
And so yeah, we would just like yell stuff at the screen during those. So it was a thing that we just kind of all did because we liked that show and we already were friends hanging out. And so it just was sort of, it felt very easy to slip into that when we decided like, let's record these and sell them to other people.
Perfect. Any other just future projects that you want to kind of spill the beans on, or are you keeping them bottled up secret for now?
I mean, I'm continuing to work with All Puppet Players. We're doing, like I said, Die Hard right now in, I think, February, March of next year, 2024. We're going to do a Princess Bride show. So like a puppet show version of the Princess Bride. future projects. I don't know if these are all 100% like guaranteed, but he's the director, the owner of the company, has talked about doing like The Lost Boys. He's talked about doing an original show called Attack of the Video Store, about like a blockbuster style, or like a mom and pop video store that comes to life and like starts attacking people. Nice. So yeah, we're definitely, I'm sure I'll continue doing shows with them. We've never officially closed the door on Sinister Theater. It's just a question of finding the time to commit to where we, you know, can block out. Like, let's meet every week for the next like 6 weeks and crank one of these out. But I'm sure at some point we will put out another riff, and then we'll post it on our Facebook page, which is still out, you know. So we're on Facebook, Sinister Theater, Sinister, C-I-N-E-S-T-E-R. Nice. And then you can also check our YouTube channel, Poobah 103. I think we also have a Sinister Theater. Like, so Poobah 103 is mostly my YouTube channel, but it's where we uploaded a lot of our trailers and things. So if we have a new show coming out, I'll definitely plug it there. And then I think we have a Sinister Theater YouTube channel, but I don't remember the password to that. It's been a real long time since we've uploaded anything to it. So the one to probably keep track of would be 103.
Yeah, I mean, I did set up a Sinister Theater channel on YouTube. The only thing that's on there is that Resident Evil riff. So if you want to check that out, that's where that is.
Well, throwback.
Yeah. Facebook, I would say, is probably the central location. We'll link out to any other stuff that we have going, whichever YouTube channel it winds up on.
Yeah.
Perfect. Alrighty.
We've got it all together here, Cam. We're sorted out. Don't worry.
You can tell we have a lot of production meetings.
You set your crank to Frank.
Organization.
Perfect. This has been a delight, and I really do legit hope the best for you guys, because it's hard to be out there, be a comedian, and let alone be consistent. So,
yeah, definitely. Well, thank you for reaching out and inviting us on. This was super fun.
Anytime. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for having us on your show, Cam. Best of luck to you, too.
Yeah. Right. Best of luck.
Promise. Right.
We'll return after these messages.
The Jacked Up Review Show podcast is honored to be part of the Blind Knowledge Podcast Network. Join anytime, talk the talk, and enjoy yourselves. There's something enlightening for everyone with this crowd of cool cats. Check them out.
Hey, it's Brent Pope, the host of Breakfast with Brent Pope. You've seen me on some of your favorite TV shows saying things like, "Give it up, Jimmy. You got to sink this putt to win." On Breakfast with Brent Pope, I sit down with guests from the entertainment world and we do it all over breakfast. Or should I say Breakfast? Every week on Breakfast, you get inside Hollywood info and tips, great breakfast recs and booty debates. Most of all, you get the most delightful 30 minutes of your week. So dig in. It's Breakfast time. Listen at Breakfast.com, Apple Podcasts, or wherever fine podcasts are found.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsy, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a Jacked Up.